Welcome back to the study of Proverbs. Hope you've been enjoying and learning and being encouraged by this Bible study. Last time we did chapter 4 of Proverbs, and that means we looked at first who the audience was, and we found that the audience for chapter 4 is the young man who has become a father. He's a young father. He's at the stage of his life where he's newly married, and he's a father of children. And Solomon is appealing to him on that basis. The basis of, well, now you're a father, and you have thoughts of looking back, as you naturally would, to your own father. And I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you in that context. That's what Solomon is saying. And this is a good chapter to understand. And it's also where we see wisdom personified. And as we talked about last time, that's a technique that Solomon uses to get the attention and to build the emotional link between the intangible thing called wisdom and, of course, the very tangible heart and soul of his listener. Now we are at chapter 5, and chapter 5 begins a rather long section of three chapters. Chapter 5, 6, and 7. And what these chapters are together, what they constitute together, is Solomon speaking to the last phase of the young man's life, who, you know, has grown from, as we have already explored, from the teenager to the first, 18, 19-year-old, out on his own for the first time, then to the young man establishing himself in his career and in his home life, and then, as I already recounted, the young man who is newly married and is a new father. Till now, we get to the last phase or stage that Solomon's going to address in a young man's life, and that is the young man who is well-established. We could say he's in his late 20s or into the 30s. He's well-established in his career and in his home life. He has time now and, you know, and other resources at his disposal, and you might even say he's approaching a midlife crisis. I don't know if that's quite right, but what he's going to be concerned with, we'll see, what this man will be concerned with and what Solomon will couch his advice in, let's see that. Let's take a look at what it is. First of all, know that chapters 5, 6, and 7 have the most about adultery and fornication of anywhere in Proverbs. That should give you a clue. And in fact, if I was going to title this section, I would title it Sex, Money, and Character. And those are the three things that Solomon focuses on in this section of three chapters. Now, I'm not saying that each chapter is devoted to one of those three. All I'm saying is that together, that's what they're full of. They're full of those three things. Now, we can see that as we begin in chapter 5 and look at verse 1. My son, give attention to my wisdom, incline your ear to my understanding. Now, as we explored in previous sections, that word understanding is actually not the best translation. If we were to look at that word in modern English, it would be discernment. It would be to distinguish and to discern. So right away, Solomon is saying, okay, I want you to discern. I want to set you up for understanding the good from the bad. Look what else we can find in this chapter. We go, or this section, I should say. Look over at chapter 6, and you'll find that the first 11 verses of chapter 6 are about money. Look at verse 1. My son, if you've become surety for your neighbor, have given a pledge to a stranger. Look at verse 6 of chapter 6. Go to the ant, O sluggard, observe her ways and be wise, which having no chief, officer or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. You see what's going on there? Money and making money and, you know, work and industry, those sorts of things. Now jump down to verse 12 of chapter 6. A worthless person, a wicked man, is the one who walks with a false mouth. This is about dealing with people. Dealing with people. That is your character. So we can see from these clues just who the audience is that Solomon is speaking to now in chapters 5, 6, and 7. And it is the person who is at the stage of life where his concerns in his life are these things: sex, money, and having the proper character, having a good character and a good reputation, and knowing how to deal with people. So let's jump in, and let's read the first three verses. Chapter 5. My son, give attention to my wisdom, incline your ear to my understanding, that you may observe discretion, and your lips may reserve knowledge. For the lips of an adulteress drip honey, and smoother than oil is her speech. Well, right away, Solomon zeroes in on the temptation that the young man, who's still fairly young, you know, he's young enough to be still quite virile, yet he is comfortable, has discretionary time, discretionary income. And what Solomon's really doing in this section, 5, 6, and 7, is he's exhorting this young man to avoid the failings of success, the entrapments, the temptations, the failings of having success in life. Because that's what this stage is. This is the young man's success stage. He's comfortable. He's established. And look what Solomon says right off. He says, you're going to meet women other than your wife who will flatter you. She will flatter you. Verse 3, the lips of an adulteress drip honey, and smoother than oil is her speech. You're going to be flattered. You have a comfortable life, and you have a beautiful wife, and you are very appreciative of her, and you love her. But things, you know, have gotten a little dull at home, and you're probably looking around. You shouldn't be. You may recall that Job, remember, that's one of the wisdom books. Job said that he had made a covenant with his eyes to not be looking around. And this is what this young man should do. And Solomon is going to impress upon him that very fact. So he begins with, you know, the woman, her she's going to flatter you. And notice that Solomon is saying that the beginning of an unholy liaison is this flattery. Don't we know that? Haven't we seen that? You're in the office, you're working, you've become established, you've got some tenure, and you've got some respect and some authority, and you're doing good things. And at the water cooler, you know, the ubiquitous water cooler, or you know, what they always show in the movies, or in the boardroom, or wherever it is, you are susceptible to the woman who comes alongside and says, oh, I really admire you. Or whatever her words are, that is the focus that Solomon begins with. You need to realize that this will come at you. This is going to come at you. This is very, very high potential of being in your experience, that the woman will come and say, you know, she will say nicer things and make, you know, make lovey words, you know, at you. Now, Solomon starts out with this in chapter 5, but he comes back to it in chapter 7. He comes back in chapter 7. You look over at chapter 7 and look at verse 5 of chapter 7. That they may keep you from an adulteress, from the foreigner who flatters with her words. It pretty much begins and ends this section with, watch out for this big pitfall. that will come at you in your life is just something to expect and to be aware of. All right, verse 4, and let's read through verse 6. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps lay hold of Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways are unstable. She does not know it. So now he's saying, you know, she flatters. She tries to entice you. She flatters, tries to entice. And notice how Solomon is describing this woman. In the end, she is bitter as wormwood. That is, that's poison. That's what the ancients, a term the ancients would use to say poison. She's poison, he says. And also look at verse, in the end of verse 4, sharp as a two-edged sword. Now, that is a description of a typical sword of that time, especially among the Hebrews, which would have two edges, two sides. And some commentators believe that that's a further emphasis on she can say nice things, but they're really entrapments. On one side, it sounds good. On the other side, it's a trap. Verse 5, her feet go down to death, her steps lay hold of Sheol. Now, you know that the book of Proverbs is written very much in parallelism. And that means that one line emphasizes another. And so we have the definition of Sheol right here in this verse. Her feet go down to death, her steps lay hold of Sheol. That's all Sheol is to the Jews. Sheol does not mean hell. Hell is a New Testament concept. Most believers, most Christians and believers in God in the Old Testament did not have a firm grasp on eternity. Many did. We know that King David did. Many Old Testament saints did. But by and large, there wasn't a widespread understanding of eternity among the Jews in ancient times. So when they say Sheol, they don't mean hell. What they mean is the lights out, darkness, the end. And you can see that in this verse. It defines itself. Her feet go down to death, and her steps lay hold of Sheol. What's he saying? He's saying if you mix with her, you are taking the path to death. Let me show you something. Let's flip over to Psalms. Psalm 49. So Psalms is before Proverbs. And let's go over to chapter 49. And I want to show you something. Chapter 49 of Psalms, verse 13. This is the way of those who are foolish, and of those after them who approve their words. As sheep, they are appointed for Sheol. There it is again. Death shall be their shepherd. Did you catch that? Death shall be their shepherd. A shepherd is supposed to take care of the flock. A shepherd is supposed to feed and protect and nurture and grow the flock. But the writer of the psalm there is saying that there are shepherds who do the opposite. There are shepherds who don't take care of the flock. And instead they want to take advantage of the flock and kill the flock and harm it. And this is what Solomon is saying here. If you mix up with her, if you get involved with her, she will lead you, as a shepherd, she will lead you to death. All right. Now, the next section that Solomon is going to get into here is he's going to say to this young man, who is susceptible to the flattery of a woman not his wife, who is susceptible to the many failings that come along with success, or the temptations that come along with success. He's going to tell this young man how to avoid them. He's basically going to describe, for almost the rest of this chapter, chapter 5, he's going to describe the way to hedge yourself in, the way to put a hedge around yourself to protect yourself from these things. Let's look at verse 7, and let's go all the way through verse 20. Now then, my sons, listen to me, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your vigor to others and your years to the cruel one, lest strangers be filled with your strength, and your hard-earned goods go to the house of an alien. And you groan at your latter end when your flesh and your body are consumed, and you say, how I have hated instruction, and my heart spurned reproof. And I have not listened to the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to my instructors. I was almost in utter ruin in the midst of the assembly and congregation. Let's go on. Drink water from your own cistern, and fresh water from your own well. Should your springs be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets? Let them be yours alone, and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed, and rejoice in the wife of your youth. As a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breasts satisfy you at all times. Be exhilarated always with her love. For why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress, and embrace the bosom of a foreigner? So Solomon is laying out the defense. He's describing to the young man how to defend himself against the temptations and against the pitfalls that await him. With his mind and his eyes, they're not being disciplined. So he's saying, be proactive and be disciplined. The first few verses, 7 through 14, he's basically saying, don't toy with this. You know, for a young man, really almost for any man, this is what we do. We think, or we see, or we contemplate, and then we ruminate and we think about it. And that's toying with the temptation. This is a good place for Solomon to start his defense. Don't toy with it. Don't toy with it. Look what he says. Verse 8, keep your way far from her and do not go near to the door of her house. Do you see? He says, don't take little, it won't hurt if I go look at this magazine. It won't hurt if I watch this movie or, you know, maybe have a cup of coffee with this lady at work. No. In the New Testament, this is addressed by the words run. Yes, run. We're not told to think about it. We're not told to pray about it. We're told to run. Well, there's some other verses in the New Testament, many of them, that tell us to be proactive, not only to run, but to rule out in your heart that you would even contemplate, that you would even toy, that you would even, you know, hold in your thoughts this thing of adultery. Now, I love verses 15 through 20. They get a little graphic, but I like how practical it is. It's a very practical, proactive section. 15, drink water from your own cistern and fresh water from your own well. In other words, you need to develop, you need to build, you need to nurture the relationship with your wife so that the two of you are always satisfied with each other. And it means you won't be looking around. It means you'd be less, much less likely to not be fulfilled. That's what Solomon is saying. He first says, don't toy with it. Then he says, work proactively to be fulfilled with your spouse, to be fulfilled by your wife. He starts out a little bit philosophical, you know, euphemistic, cistern and well and springs and all of that. But then he says it plainly. He says, let her breasts satisfy you at all times. Be exhilarated always with her love. That word exhilarated, if you have, some Bibles have footnotes, and if you do have one, the word there in the Hebrew is actually intoxicated. Be overcome, be satiated, be just in a rapture over the attentions of your wife. That's what he's saying. This is the way to proactively avoid the temptation with another woman. Paul will say very much the same thing in 1 Corinthians. In the book of Corinthians, there are two of them, 1st and 2nd, and they were written to the church in Corinth. And Paul said in chapter 7 of 1 Corinthians, he said, because of immorality, because of the temptation and the tendency for a man to want and feel that he needs that physical thing, Paul says, let each man have his own wife. He says it very bluntly, just about as bluntly as Solomon is here, that you need this hedge, you need this antidote to temptation. And otherwise, you can find yourself in a lot of hurt. Well, We've looked at description of the adulteress. We've seen a little bit of her character and a little bit of the consequences of being involved with her. Let's back up a little bit and notice that Solomon has also inserted consequences in the middle of the section we just read. So let's look at it again. Look at verse 9 of chapter 5. Lest you give your vigor to others and your years to the cruel one. Lest strangers be filled with your strength and your hard-earned goods go to the house of an alien. Wow. The word vigor there in verse 9, I mean, this sounds like almost like a, you know, something of your body, doesn't it? Especially when you see here, filled with your strength and all that. And then in verse 11, we do have flesh in your body. But here in 9 and 10, the word vigor there is actually better translated, and it is translated in other versions, honor. In other words, he's saying one of the consequences you're going to have, you're going to ruin your reputation. You're going to ruin the reputation you have among your peers and among, you know, other people in your circle. And then verse 10, it says, lest strangers be filled with your strength. And that's actually your wealth, the result of your hard labor. It's essentially your wealth, your goods. And doesn't that remind us of something? There is a story in the New Testament, Luke chapter 15, about the prodigal son. Everyone remembers that story. Everyone's heard of that story. And the point is made in that story that the prodigal son left his father's estate and took some of his, basically his inheritance that he hadn't yet received because his father was still alive, but he asked for it and took it and went off to a far land and spent it. And one of the ways he spent it, we're told, is on prostitutes. So it's very similar here. Solomon says, you know, you're not only going to lose your honor, you're going to lose your substance. You're going to lose your earnings. You're going to lose your possessions by doing this. And then the third thing he says, look at verse 11, and you groan at your latter end. That word groan isn't strong enough. The Hebrew is actually mourn. And there's a participle there that actually emphasizes it. So it really means to mourn excessively. In fact, there are places where it's translated a lion's roar. So Solomon is saying, not only will your reputation be harmed, not only will your substance be harmed, but you will have, if not bodily harm, which you know there is some indication of that here in verse 11, but even more than that, a spiritual harm. You will mourn, you will grieve. Verse 11, you will groan at your latter end when your flesh and your body are consumed. And verse 12 emphasizes that even more, because it says, and you will say how I have hated instruction and my heart spurned reproof. That's the idea of regret, isn't it? That is that terrible thing that many people are devastated by when at some point in their life they reach a point where they have done something that they regret for the rest of their lives, and it changes the rest of their lives. Some of them end up on the street because of it. Some of them, you know, take suicide as the way out. You know, some of them become addicts or alcoholics because of terrible, terrible regret. Well, let's look at verse 20. For why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress and embrace the bosom of a foreigner? For the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he watches all his paths. His own iniquities will capture the wicked, and he'll be held captive with the cords of his sin. He will die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he will go astray. Well, this takes us to the end of chapter 5, and what Solomon is saying here is another consequence. We've already seen three of them: reputation, substance, and regret, and now he adds judgment. And of course, this would be judgment by God. Look at verse 21. For the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he watches all of his paths. Now, many people do not understand the idea of sin and judgment, and they tend to think that individual sins are what will send them to hell. And that's not what the Bible says. Despite the fact that some religions say that, the Catholic religion, for example. No, the Bible says that it's the character of sin, not the act of sin, that judges you. Jesus himself said, I'm not judging you. You were born judged. You were born a sinner. Therefore, you were born judged. But here we have, you'll be judged. Look at verse 21. For the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he watches all of his paths. You're not going to get away with it, is the point. You're not going to get away with it. Now, did you see in the middle of that verse? Before the eyes of the Lord. Yes, it's the Lord doing this, not man. Now, when we get to the last verse there, he will die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly, he will go astray. That is just telling us, again, this is very poetic and very nuanced verbiage. He's telling us the consequence is eternal. There are other verses that speak to the same thing. There are verses in the New Testament that say, no fornicator will enter heaven. Now, again, that's not because of the act of fornication. That's because of the sin nature that is not redeemed and that expresses itself in fornication and other sins. It's just that they are evidence of an unregenerated life. Well, let's go on and get into chapter 6. We won't be able to do all three chapters this time. Let's go on. Chapter 6, and as we said earlier, this is where Solomon will begin to go into the other two themes. Remember, the three themes here are sex, money, and character, or how you deal with other people. And now in chapter 6, he's going to talk about money. Chapter 6, verse 1, my son, if you have become surety for your neighbor, have given a pledge for a stranger, if you've been snared with the words of your mouth, have been caught with the words of your mouth, do this then, my son, deliver yourself, since you have come into the hand of your neighbor. Go humble yourself and importune your neighbor. Do not give sleep to your eyes, nor slumber to your eyelids. Deliver yourself like a gazelle from the hunter's hand, and like a bird from the hand of the fowler. Let's keep going. We'll go through 11. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Observe her ways and be wise, which having no chief, officer, or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and your poverty will come in like a vagabond, and your need like an armed man. Now, the reason we went through verse 11 is because Solomon is saying, you need to learn, you need to watch out for when you have a lot of money that you're going to be wise with it. You need to be wise with it. That's what he's saying in verses 1 through 11. Be wise with your money. Obviously, verses 1 through 5 are about co-signing. And you know, the Bible has a lot to say against co-signing. And then verses 6 through 11 are about industry. In other words, the things you do to make money. And notice how it starts out with, go to the ant, O sluggard, because this is a powerful and repeating theme in the book of Proverbs, and that is, there's nothing wrong with making money, there's nothing wrong with becoming rich, but some people have the opposite problem. Some people don't want to work. Some people think that life owes them a living, or that the society owes them a living. And the Bible calls those people sluggards. It calls them lazy. And in the context of this young man who's reached a point of success, which of course includes possessions and money, it could be that in the context, Solomon is saying, you know, you might feel like you can back off and cruise, or that you don't need to work diligently anymore, or be careful about your finances. But you do. You still need to be careful about your finances. Not waste them and not take them for granted. It could be that that's what's going on here. But either way, whether it's the former or the latter, someone who doesn't want to work or someone who thinks that now they've reached a certain level, they, you know, don't want to work anymore or don't want to be diligent, whichever it is, the point is the same, that the young man needs to watch out because he can lose his substance, he can lose his money either way, either by getting in bad deals with people, which would include co-signing, or by not watching out for his income stream. His work and his income. Now at verse 12 and going through verse 19, Solomon is coming back to one of his previous themes, and that is treat people right. Look what he says. A worthless person, a wicked man, we'll go through 19. A worthless person, a wicked man, is the one who walks with a false mouth, who winks with his eyes, who signals with his feet, who points with his fingers, who with perversity in his heart devises evil continually, who spreads strife. Therefore, his calamity will come suddenly. Instantly, he'll be broken, and there'll be no healing. There are six things which the Lord hates, yes, even seven which are an abomination to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that run rapidly to evil, a false witness who utters lies, and one who spreads strife among brothers. He says, treat people right. He's talking about preying on others with lying. In verse 13, he mentions conniving. In 14, he mentions contention. And in 15, he says, this will come back on you if you do these things. And then beginning in verse 20 and going through 23, he basically says, don't do these things. You were raised better. Look at verse 21. 21, he says, bind them continually on your heart, tie them around your neck. He's saying the training you got in younger years, you should have by now made it a lifestyle. It should be a lifestyle. You shouldn't be susceptible to hurting people and taking advantage of people and lying and contending. That shouldn't be part of you. Well, we're going to stop here, and next time we'll finish up chapter 6 and go on to chapter 7 and finish this section of chapters 5 through 7, which is all about sex, money, and character. And I'll remind you again that these pieces of advice, these exhortations to do the right thing because you have a relationship with God, we can't do these things that God is telling us to do by speaking through Solomon unless we have a relationship with God. And the Bible says that the only way to have a relationship with God is to believe in the Son whom he sent to die for us and to pay the penalty for our sin, the penalty that we deserved and that we should have got, but he got instead. Don't lose sight of that fact. Meantime, until we come back and finish this section of 5 through 7 and see what it has for us, in the meantime, believe God.